last connection with the Builder. It had destroyed the ancient sphere, a work of wonder, a palace of technological prizes, a storehouse of knowledge such as no human must have ever had access to before.
"Galleon," Maddox whispered. "I need to speak to Galleon."
No one said a word. It finally dawned on Maddox what had happened. The AI core chamber had exploded, electrocuting one of them, maybe badly burning him. Victory and some of Port Admiral Hayes's flotilla had won free of the sphere and escaped Commander Thrax T-X. But they may have lost the ancient AI and any means of reaching human space in the next several years, if ever. Chapter 49. Maddox woke up in the infirmary, his skin covered with a healing salve, while bandages covered the majority of his body. He itched horribly.
"Hello?"
the captain said. A man snorted and stood, appearing in the captain's view. With his hand, the man brushed his hair before grinning in a lopsided manner.
"What has you so amused, Sergeant?"
Maddox asked.
"You're alive, sir, and doing well according to the medical machines. Ludendorff is worse off, but he'll make it."
"The Lady Shauna?"
Maddox asked. Riker's smile fell.
"I'm afraid she wasn't as lucky, sir. Meta says the lady took the brunt of the first discharge. It seems she did it for you, shielding you from the worst of it."
"What?"
Maddox said.
"The Kai Kaos believe they're indebted to you. One of the elders told Meta it was Lady Shauna's privilege to die so you could live."
Maddox found that he couldn't swallow. He turned away.
"It's all right, sir," Riker said, patting his arm.
Maddox stiffened in pain.
"Oh, sorry about that," Riker said. "Your skin is still tender."
"What's the military situation? How long have I been under?"
"About 10 hours, Riker said.
"We're doing fine, heading toward a weird beacon."
"Does anyone know what the beacon is?"
"I do," Galleon said.
Maddox stared in silence at the dim, hollow image. It didn't have the same clarity as before, but the little ADOC was there.
"You survived,"
Maddox exclaimed.
"That seems obvious," Galleon said. "I am here, thus I am existent. How could it be otherwise?"
"Right," Maddox said. "Why are you dimmer than before?"
"My backup system does not have the same connection with the extra computing chamber Dana discovered. It will take time to reconnect them."
"You never told us about a backup system."
"Correct," Galleon said. "I did not even know I possessed one. I have been looking forward to your recovery, Captain. I have questions concerning the end on the sphere. An irresistible force yanked me from my task. Do you know what that was?"
"The Builder,"
Maddox said.
"Did it destroy the Builder AI box on purpose, do you think?"
Maddox thought back to the final conversation.
"Yes, I believe so."
"Interesting," Galleon said. "There is so much I would have liked to catalog. I had begun the process on the sphere. Given time, I could have recorded the Builder's knowledge."
Maddox considered that, and he realized humanity had almost leaped maybe millennia in technology all across the board. Maybe Galleon could have recorded further back than ancient human history. The AI might have recovered records of the timeless war against the nameless ones.
"In the final analysis, I recorded nothing," Galleon said. "The Builder caused me to lose everything. The loss is incalculable."
"I've been wondering about something," Riker said. "What was that ghostly tube we saw at the end? No one knows. Valerie tried analyzing it, but she couldn't pick up any readings that made sense. Did you see it, Galleon?"
"Of course," the AI said. "My analyzer gives it an 86% probability of being a hyperspatial tube."
86%?
Maddox asked.
86.328%, to be precise, Galleon said. Yes, one must strive for precision, Maddox said. Are you ribbing me, sir?
He is, Riker said, although the captain would never admit it.
If that was a hyperspatial tube, Maddox said, would that imply Commander Thrax employed it?
I believe so, Galleon said. It was impossible to tell, but my sensors combined with logic implied the starting point was from inside the sphere. That means an unknown number of swarm-run vessels escaped. Do you have any idea where the tube went?
Fear boiled up in Maddox. Thrax TX went to Earth.
The tube was pointed in the wrong direction to reach Earth, Galleon said.
What direction did it go?
Toward the center of the galaxy, Galleon said.
Ah, the captain said. Yes. The commander went 1,000 light years or more. The builder told me earlier it was going to give Thrax passage back to the Swarm Empire.
That sounds ominous, Galleon said.
For the future it does, Maddox said. We have no idea how far the Swarm Empire is from us at present.
My records indicate the Swarm never discovered wormholes. Will Commander Thrax bring them this technology?
I'd say that's a near certainty, Maddox said.
This is grave news, Galleon said. My long vigil in my star system may have been in vain.
Hardly that, Galleon, Maddox said. Because of you, we have advanced warning of a coming peril.
Thank you for your kind words, Captain.
Several beeps sounded from a nearby board. Uh-oh, Riker said. That's going to bring Meta. She's going to give you another injection, sir. Your body is working overtime, building new skin tissue. You're going back to sleep for a while.
Maddox nodded.
You never did tell me. What are we traveling toward?
I did say, Riker told him. It's a beacon, a large one shaped like a silver pyramid.
Where is it?
At the end of this star system, Riker said. It was cloaked before. Valerie found it soon after the Dyson Sphere's destruction. Galleon figures something on the sphere kept the cloak in place. Once the builder died, the cloak stopped working on the pyramid.
A silver pyramid, Maddox said. Does that mean we might be able to find a hyperspatial tube after all?
We're all hoping, sir.
The hatch slid open, and Meta walked in.
Everyone out, she said. I have a patient that needs tending. The rest of you are just going to be in the way.
Galleon disappeared, while Riker winked at the captain. Then the sergeant sauntered out, whistling an old tune between his teeth. Because of his increased metabolism, Maddox healed faster than the professor did. The captain was up in time for Lady Shauna's funeral. It was a moving affair, and it helped cement the Kike House to Maddox even more than before. The next 2 days flashed by in hard work as the Kike House repaired the damage to Victory and tried to settle into a normal routine aboard the starship. The Adok vessel matched velocities with the Port Admiral's slowest ship, which was slow indeed. Maddox decided there was one positive to the destruction of Galleon's AI core chamber. If Ludendorff had practiced any deviousness there, the annihilation of the core chamber had trumped it. After a journey of many days across the system, the flotilla of Star Watch vessels began to break. Maddox was on the bridge in his chair. It was the first time since the core explosion that he could wear clothes without discomfort. Galleon had zoomed in on the silver pyramid, putting it onto the main screen at maximum magnification.
Is there any noticeable difference to this nexus compared to the one in the Xerxes system?
The captain asked.
None that I have been able to decipher, Galleon said.
Maddox tapped his chin before glancing at the others.
Any suggestions? He asked.
What's the mechanism for turning on a hyperspatial tube? Valerie asked.
Exactly, Maddox said. I have no idea.
We're back to Meta's memory of her time with Kane, Valerie said. They went inside the Xerxes Nexus, but they didn't use a hyperspatial tube. It could take a long time to figure this out.
Maddox nodded.
And the longer we take, Valerie said, the more damage the builder's android doubles could be doing back on Earth.
Yes, Maddox said.
What does the professor suggest we do?
Maddox shook his head.
He'd spoken a little to Ludendorff about hyperspatial tubes. The professor had finally begun to recover from his injuries. Unfortunately, the Methuselah man was still too tired to talk for long. Maddox wondered if the professor could be faking his tiredness. He didn't like the possibility. After everything they had been through, he wanted to be able to trust the man. With an inward sigh, the captain realized he'd have to continue keeping an eye on Ludendorff. Until recently, the professor hasn't known about the Dyson sphere or hyperspatial tubes, Maddox said. He told me we're back to being primates before a black monolith, baffled by technological mysteries beyond our understanding.
Sir?
Valerie asked. I didn't understand the reference either, Maddox admitted. We're going to need the best Kai Kaos minds, the professor's insights.
Captain, Galleon said, I am detecting a silver whirlpool. It is similar to what we detected by the Xerxes system nexus. Do you suppose the builder programmed the pyramid to activate a hyperspatial tube at our approach?
That strikes me as the most sensible explanation. The vast sense of relief at seeing the silver whirlpool surprised Maddox. The reality of being stranded 1,000 light-years from the Xerxes system had tightened in him for so long that he had no longer been consciously aware of it. With its release, Valerie laughed with glee. Keith shouted, pumping a fist in the air. We're going home, Maddox declared.
Yes, sir, mate. Captain, sir, Keith said as he laughed.
I have a question, Galleon said.
What?
Maddox said with a smile. How do we know that this hyperspatial tube will actually take us to Earth? The AI asked.
Maddox blinked at the hollow image as some of the good feeling evaporated.
Is it pointed in Earth's direction?
Affirmative, Galleon said.
Maddox nodded decisively. Well, we'll use the Lahmer drive and enter the tube, hoping for the best, unless you have a better idea.
I am sorry to say, I do not.
Right, Maddox said. It's time to tell the others and get ready for the voyage home.
Chapter 50 Dr. Dana Rich's eyes flew open. She shivered a second later, realizing she was cold. She also happened to be quite nude. With agonizing slowness, she brought up her hands and pressed them against a clear substance. That did not immediately compute in her thoughts. She felt around, pressing her palms and fingertips against chilly glass. Glass. She looked around, absorbing what she saw.
I'm inside a glass tube.
How had she come to be here? How?
Dana's eyes widened. She realized that not only was she standing up in a tube, but that hundreds of others stood in their own glass tubes. There were rows of tubes, each of them with a naked occupant. She recognized people from the Atlantis Project. And was that Brigadier O'Hara? How had the Iron Lady managed to find herself in a tube?
Dana groaned. The big old man in the end tube in the third row appeared to be the Lord High Admiral of Star Watch. If he was in a tube, who ran the war effort against the new men? Who ran Star Watch? What had happened to Earth?
A hatch opened, and a woman in a strange uniform stepped into the chamber. The woman wore a military-style hat and frowned as she studied them. At that moment, Dana's tube began to rise. It did not take the doctor with the glass, but freed her from confinement.
You must stay where you are, the uniformed woman said. There has been a malfunction. We are going to fix it in the next hour or two.
Who are you? Dana called out. What happened to us?
Those questions are immaterial during the emergency, the uniformed woman said. She forced a smile. You are under treatment for your own good. Remain in place, I implore you, and everything will be fine.
Dana took several steps out of a small circle, doing the exact opposite as the woman suggested. The uniformed woman drew a stunner from a holster.
Dr. Rich, you must obey me. As I have said, this is for your own good. We do not wish for you to be damaged in any way.
Dana was confused. The last thing she remembered was exiting a submersible that had brought her to an incredible find at the bottom of the ocean. Yes, a deep underwater pyramid. Wait, damaged? The woman had said they did not wish for her to become damaged. Who talked like that?
Why am I a prisoner?
Dana said loudly. At that moment, other tubes began to rise.
Stay where you are,
the uniformed woman said.
The equipment will come back online in moments. This is an emergency. We ask you to bear with us and stay in your circles.
Who do you mean by us? Dana called.
Who are you?
Never mind, doctor,
the woman said.
This is your last warning.
Dana hadn't forgotten the skills she'd learned during her prison sentence on Loki Prime. Before that, the Brahmin Secret Service had given her field training. She didn't have Meta's strength, but she was formidable just the same. Dana began to back up, putting distance between the stunner and her.
What are you doing, doctor?
The uniformed woman called out.
Maybe I can find an emergency outlet, Dana said. I'd like to help.
No, you are sick. We are treating you, all of you. This is for the best.
Thank you most profoundly, Dana said. I feel so much better already.
Stay where you are, the woman said. This is your final warning.
Charge her,
the Lord High Admiral said. She can't shoot all of us. So saying, the naked old man began to run at the armed woman, his feet slapping against cold tiles.
I don't want to do this, the woman said, raising her stunner. Don't force me to fire. You are an old man and cannot sustain stun damage.
I'll be damned if I'm going to be a tame prisoner,
Cook shouted in a deep voice.
Come on, people. You may be naked, but that doesn't mean you can't fight. Charge with me! Charge!
A few others rallied to the old man's poignant cry, among them the gray-haired Iron Lady. The uniformed woman pressed the stunner button. A bolt of force ejected, striking the Lord High Admiral on the chest, knocking him unconscious onto the floor. She retargeted, knocking another down. Dana sprinted to the back of the chamber. She might have felt foolish running naked, but she was too determined. She saw a pile of clothing back here. Maybe someone had forgotten them. The stunner kept discharging, dropping people, and the others wavered. Only a few had charged. Then the Iron Lady went down too.
I will show no mercy, the uniformed woman shouted. I will hurt you unless you submit.
The people in front came to a stop. Those behind bumped up against them, and then they all stopped. Soon, everyone waited, sheepishly, staring at the uniformed woman with the stunner. At that point, another uniformed person entered the large chamber. He was a lean man with angular features, and he too drew a stunner.
You must go back to your circled spots, the man said.
Dana knelt by the articles of clothing. She looked up sharply, recognizing the voice and face of Captain Maddox. What was he doing down here in the Atlantis Project? Why would he help those who stunned the Lord High Admiral and Brigadier O'Hara? Obviously, one of the others wondered the same thing.
I recognize you, Captain Maddox, he spoke up. Why are you keeping us prisoner?
Maddox appeared to think about that. Finally, he nodded.
Do you believe you're Major Stokes?
I am Major Stokes,
the naked man said.
No, you're an android.
What?
Stokes said. Maddox regarded the naked throng.
Listen, this is a terrible joke, a prank, call it what you will. The builder is responsible for it. He activated this pyramid under the sea some time ago. It was constructed in the distant past. Why it came on now, I don't know. What it did, however, was begin a duplication process. The real people you were modeled after were captured and duplicated. Fortunately, Star Watch Intelligence, with spacer help, broke the conspiracy. You are all androids who think you are real people. We're trying to decide what to do with you. Unfortunately, we can't just let you go free or you would create chaos.
Why do I feel as if I'm the real Major Stokes?
Because Builder technology is the best, Maddox said. You are proof of that. The Builder desired androids that truly believed they were alive.
Dana rummaged through the clothing. Her heart beat quicker as she saw a black matted gun. She picked it up. It was a revolver. Opening the cylinder, she saw that it had all 6 bullets.
I see you crouching back there, Dana, Maddox shouted. Come join the others.
Dana stood, canting to the side. She let her arms hang, holding the revolver against her thigh. She moved toward the throng, making sure her body blocked the weapon from the captain's sight.
Will the Lord High Admiral be well?
Dana shouted. Maddox glanced at the downed cook. Dana walked faster. She had to get closer. She wasn't a crack shot like the captain. He was uncanny in fighting skills, almost as good as a full-blooded new man.
Why do we feel shame at being naked, if we're androids?
Stokes asked. That was a good question, Dana realized.
I have already answered your questions, Maddox said. You have all the attributes of a real person.
Wouldn't that make us real, then?
Stokes asked.
That is a theological question, Maddox said. I am not skilled on the topic.
Dana's heart flared with certainty then. The real Captain Maddox would not have admitted to such a humble attitude. That thing was an android, pretending the real people were the androids.
You're not skilled in theology?
Dana asked.
I have said as much, Maddox told her.
What else are you unskilled in?
She asked. Stokes looked at her sharply. She gave him the barest of nods.
What are you hoping to achieve, Doctor? Maddox asked.
You don't seem like Captain Maddox, Dana said.
The captain laughed.
That is because of faulty wiring in you. The others here do not perceive any fault in me.
I do,
Stokes said.
I am Captain Maddox. I am real. I live, I breathe, I eat, I think.
Enough,
the uniformed woman beside him said.
You will not convince them in that manner.
Maddox looked at her.
I am real, he said.
You appear to be malfunctioning, she said. You will take yourself to the replicator for repair.
The people glanced at one another.
No, Maddox said. Your words, they indicate I am an android.
Does it matter?
The uniformed woman said.
Yes, I am real. I breathe. I eat.
A single shot rang out. The high-velocity bullet cracked against Captain Maddox's skull, knocking the android against the bulkhead.
Grab the stunners, Dana shouted. Go, get them!
The people looked back at her. Dana stood in a shooter's stance with her right foot forward, the revolver held with both hands. The uniformed woman stared at the knocked-down Maddox and then at Dana. She brought up her stunner. Another shot rang out, hitting the uniformed woman in the head. Like the first shot, this one hurled the targeted android against the wall. With a roar of desperation, the crowd of people surged forward, with Major Stokes in the lead. Behind them, Dana ran to catch up. If she had to, she was going to put a bullet through each android's eye, finishing the wardens who had kept them on ice for who knew how long. Despite the circuits, coils, and showering sparks, Dana felt soiled murdering the 2 androids. She had shot each again because they had refused to stop struggling. Now their group had 2 stunners, and Dana had 2 bullets left.
Ready?
Dana asked. She wore the female android's panties, various articles of clothing going to different people.
Let's do this,
Stokes said, one of the men helping a disoriented Lord High Admiral onto his feet. Dana eased open the hatch to chaos. Several androids, she assumed they were androids, ran through a vast chamber, clutching multicolored boxes against their bodies. The boxes must be important, but why? Dana wrinkled her nose. That was an electrical fire, she smelled. Yes, she could hear crackling flames. In the distance, something exploded. Someone in the group screamed. A man in back roared, "We have to get out of here!" Dana shut the hatch and whirled around.
"We have to keep our heads. Remember, people, we are on the ocean floor. If you panic down here, we're dead."
A woman began to sob.
"That's it," Dana told her. "Get it out of your system. I want you to help me. Are you ready to help me?"
The crying woman looked at Dana with confusion as tears streamed down her face. Her sobbing grew more intense. Dana stepped to her, hugging the woman, and then shaking her.
"I need your help," she said directly into her face. "You have to pull it together now. There's no more time."
The woman stopped wailing, sniffling instead, as she began to hiccup.
"I'm okay," she whispered. "I can do this. Thanks."
Dana looked at the others.
"Something happened down here. Maybe the pyramid's computers have a virus. Maybe the place is simply too old. We have to commandeer a submersible and get to the surface."
"What if the androids attack us?" a man said.
"We destroy any android getting in our way," Dana said. "Is that clear?"
"But if—" "For heaven's sake," Stokes said. "What's wrong with you people? This lady is a lifesaver. I plan to listen to her. I think the rest of you should, too, if you want to live."
The major turned on the sniffling woman. "Do you want to live?" She nodded emphatically as she wiped her nose.
"Right," Stokes said. "Then we follow Dr. Rich's command. Whoever doesn't—"
Stokes jerked a thumb at the Lord High Admiral.
"We'll have to answer to him during a court-martial later."
Dana took a deep breath. She wasn't used to leading during a fight. She could lead during a scientific study, or— The doctor shook her head. She'd have to think like Captain Maddox. He knew how to lead a group. She couldn't believe she had killed the captain's android. She had half wondered if it would feel good after all the slights in the past she'd endured. It had not felt good, though. The real Maddox had been too good to her for too long to feel any resentment against him anymore.
"We're heading for the dock," she said. "Grab what you can on the way there. Put down whoever you have to so we can survive. We all have to stick together, though. And we're not waiting for anyone."
She glanced at a few people. They nodded back.
"Get mad," Dana added. "Androids have been living your lives. They might have screwed up everything for you and for Earth. If that doesn't make you angry, I don't know what will."
"We're ready," Stokes told her.
Dana nodded, realizing she was hesitating to do this. This could get them all killed. She didn't want to die. She didn't want— With a shout, Dana hurled open the hatch and walked into the vast chamber. She kept going, looking around. The fires had increased. There was a harsh-smelling smoke gathering on the ceiling. She couldn't see any running androids now. In a throng, with Dana in the lead with her two-bullet revolver, the group surged across the chamber. Some of the people coughed explosively. Others hacked, spitting on the floor.
"Which way are the docks?" a man wailed.
"Shut up," Dana called back. "Keep your composure. Maybe we can do this without having to fight and kill.
Or be killed," she thought to herself.
It struck Dana that she led a VIP throng to the submersibles, if there were any left at the docks. The Iron Lady, the Lord High Admiral, Commonwealth senators, bank presidents, high-level bureaucrats. What was Earth like? Dana assumed the androids had taken their places and wondered what they had done. It was an awful feeling. She turned a corner and came upon three androids dragging a heavy sled full of strange equipment. The androids stopped to stare at them.
"Hands up," Dana said, aiming the revolver at the three.
"Don't be absurd," the lead android said. "This is our—" A shot rang out and the android toppled onto the floor. He began to thrash as sparks showered out of his blasted eye.
"What about you two?" Dana asked. "Want to cease existing?"
The two androids threw their hands into the air.
"Back up," she said.
They let go of the cables they'd been using to drag the sled and took three steps back.
"That's good enough,"
Dana said as people thronged behind her. She kept the gun aimed at these two. At the same time, she knelt by the slowly thrashing android taking an automatic from a holster. The two with their hands up didn't appear to be armed.
"What is this?"
Dana asked, pointing at the sled of equipment. Neither android said a word.
"I can still kill you," Dana said.
"This is an emergency repair unit," one android said. "The leader hopes to repair the damage created by a random pulse signal."
"What signal?"
Dana asked. "The one from the Dyson Sphere," the android said.
That doesn't make sense.
That is because you are a wet body with limited knowledge, the android said.
The computers in the pyramid received a new signal?
Dana asked.
Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
When did this happen?
Dana asked. Less than an hour ago, the android said. The pulse came with the arrival of Starship Victory.
I'll be damned, Dana said.
So this has something to do with Captain Maddox, does it?
That is our working assumption.
Dana smiled wryly. She should have known.
How long are we going to jabber here? Stokes asked.
You're going to lead us to the docks,
Dana told the androids.
We cannot, the speaker said. We must bring the repair unit to the leader. We must attempt to repair the damage. You must release us.
Dana hesitated. The android that hadn't spoken until now turned to the speaker.
Let us kill the woman and those with her. Then we can take the repair unit to the leader.
Dana used her last bullet, dropping the one who had made the suggestion. The last android raised its arms even higher than before.
Do you want to cease to exist as well?
Dana asked, all too aware the revolver was out of bullets. The thing shook its head. Then Dana realized the three of them had struggled to move the sled. With just one android left,
okay,
Dana said.
Go ahead. Drag the equipment to your leader. I don't care anymore.
She backed away, handed the empty gun to a woman behind her, and jacked a bullet into the semi-automatic's chamber. Afterward, she started for the docks again. A glance back showed the lone android slipping and sliding on the floor as it tried to drag the sled by itself. It wasn't going anywhere, but that didn't seem to deter the thing. It was like an ant trying to drag a bug too big for it. The rest of the journey proved uneventful compared to what had already transpired. With the semi-automatic in hand, Dana reached the docks. She handed the gun to the same woman who had taken the empty revolver and went to the controls. The doctor's fingers flew over a board. 5 minutes later, Dana led the throng through a tube into a waiting submersible. It looked like they might escape to the surface after all.
What's it like up there?
Stokes said, who walked beside her.
I have no idea, Dana said.
Stokes appeared thoughtful.
What have our counterparts done? He sighed. I hope they haven't soiled our names.
Dana didn't want to think about it, but she had a bad feeling she was going to have to, very soon indeed.
Chapter 51. Dana sat in the submersible's control room. Major Stokes piloted the vessel. A groggy Brigadier O'Hara leaned her forearms on the weapons board. The Lord High Admiral was in sickbay, having developed an ugly cough, his skin stark white. The android had warned him about his inability to take a stunner shot. It appeared she, or it, had been correct.
Just a minute, Dana said.
Stokes glanced at her. He piloted the vessel away from the underwater dome. So far, no other submersibles appear to be after them.
We can't leave them there,
Dana said.
What do you have in mind? Stokes asked. You want to save the androids, too?
You misjudge my idea, Dana said. We can't leave the androids down there trying to fix the situation. Some of the most important people on Earth and in Star Watch are in our submarine. That means the androids kidnapped us at great detriment to our society.
True enough, Stokes said.
Dana chewed on her lower lip.
The pyramid appears to have been a trap.
No doubt about that, Stokes agreed.
We have to destroy it.
The major raised his eyebrows.
Do you understand what you're saying? The pyramid is priceless. It has builder tech, or tech beyond ours. Those androids are incredible. Maybe we can use them.
Use them how?
Dana asked. Stokes shrugged.
I can imagine Star Watch wanting to make shock troopers out of them, using the androids against the new men, perhaps.
That's a wretched idea.
I don't see why. It will save humans from having to risk their lives in infantry combat.
You saw what just happened. We were captives. If you allow robots or androids to fight for you, soon they will rule. No, men and women must do their own fighting. Besides, why wouldn't the androids become a worse menace than the new men?
It was just a suggestion, Stokes said.
Then you agree with me?
Dana said. Stokes appeared thoughtful, finally shaking his head.
I'm afraid I don't, Doctor. There could be more people trapped down there. The devices we might uncover.
The submersible shuddered. Dana and Stokes looked up at the main screen. Two torpedoes zoomed out of the tubes. The torpedoes began a tight turn toward the dome and the pyramid underneath. Both Dana and Stokes turned to Brigadier O'Hara. The Iron Lady wore an android's uniform. Her fingers still rested on the firing buttons. Slowly, she turned to regard them.
This is war, O'Hara said in a ragged voice.
Ma'am, Stokes said.
Better get us out of here, O'Hara said. The coming concussion could damage our submersible.
Stokes swirled around, tapping his board. Dana swayed back against her seat as thrust shoved the submersible ahead. The Iron Lady had made the decision for them. Turning to her board, Dana activated it. A screen flickered just in time for her to see the results. The torpedoes slammed against the dome, igniting. Bubbles explosively surged upward as some of the underwater building's hull plating blew apart. The second torpedo did likewise, sending bubbles geysering toward the distant surface. Moments later, the submersible rocked from the underwater concussion. The bulkheads groaned ominously all around them.
Don't do that again, Stokes shouted.
Like a crabby little girl doing the opposite of what she was told, O'Hara pressed the firing buttons again. A second later, two more torpedoes zoomed into view. Stokes swiveled around.
Ma'am, I beg you to desist. You'll destroy us too.
Brigadier O'Hara looked up with a haggard expression.
Androids, Major. Androids held us captive. It was a nightmare. We can only presume android doubles have taken our places. I can hardly conceive of a worse horror.
I can think of several, Stokes muttered.
O'Hara shook her head.
I loathe them. The very idea makes me tremble with revulsion. I want to squish them flat like wasps.
Stokes eyed the brigadier. Dana heard the hysteria in the Iron Lady's voice. O'Hara seemed to be on the very edge.
Have you been underwater before?
Dana asked. Slowly, O'Hara turned to Dana.
What?
The brigadier said. Dana repeated the question.
No,
O'Hara said.
It's a pressurized feeling, Dana explained. It takes getting used to.
O'Hara frowned, soon nodding. More explosions told of the second pair of torpedoes slamming against the dome. Time passed, and the concussion rocked the submersible again, although with less force than last time.
You will begin to feel better once we approach the surface, Dana told the brigadier. I hope you're right, O'Hara said. I feel distressed. This is a distressing situation, Dana said.
O'Hara nodded.
How do you maintain your composure? It's quite impressive down here.
Dana gave the brigadier a wintry smile.
I've been traveling with Captain Maddox for some time. This kind of situation is actually rather commonplace with him.
O'Hara reached up, putting a stray strand of hair into place.
One of the androids told us something interesting, Dana said. Starship Victory has returned. With the vessel came a pulse that apparently began a chain reaction down there. I wonder what Maddox has achieved this time. When he left, O'Hara said, he was headed to the Xerxes system. Bingo, Dana said. The Nexus must have something in common with the ancient pyramid down here. He's figured out something critical again.
O'Hara regarded Stokes.
Can you make this thing go any faster?
We're near its operational limit now, ma'am.
What are you thinking?
Dana asked the brigadier.
Yes, O'Hara said. That's what we must do. We have an advantage. At least I suspect we do.
We must think of a way to use our present advantage against the impersonating androids still functioning in our places.
Right, Dana said. We've escaped our captivity. Maybe the androids impersonating us don't know that yet. Maybe destroying the dome.
I doubt I got them all, O'Hara said.
Maybe you crippled their headquarters, though.
The haggard expression hardened. Despite my dislike of the underwater psychic pressure, O'Hara said, I believe we should go back down and complete the dome's destruction.
I don't think that is a good idea, Stokes said. We've managed to get unbelievably lucky so far. That luck will not hold if we push it too far.
Luck had nothing to do with it, O'Hara said. The doctor's decisive action is what saved our lives.
The Lord High Admiral helped when he charged, Stokes said.
Yes, O'Hara said. The man is courage exemplified, but it was Dr. Rich who incapacitated the enemy.
None of that matters now, Dana said, interrupting. We need a plan, a way to thwart the androids who are masquerading as us.
A plan, O'Hara said. Yes, I believe you're right. Come, Doctor, let us put our heads together. You and I shall devise contingency plans so we'll know what to do once we surface.
They bypassed the dome's surface air pad in the mid-Atlantic, deciding androids likely controlled it. For hours, Stokes piloted the submersible, keeping away from any other submarines they spotted via sonar. After a time, Dana and the Brigadier went to see the Lord High Admiral. The old man sat up in bed, his skin still far too pale. His eyes looked rheumy and bloodshot, and his breath came in labored gasps.
What were you thinking, charging an android with a stunner, Admiral? O'Hara chided.
Cook gave her a ghastly grin, as if he had enjoyed his lonesome charge.
Have to set an example,
Cook said in a hoarse voice.
Couldn't wait for anyone else, he said. Besides, I've sent too many fine people into combat lately. It was good to have a turn again.
He stared off into space.
Yes, very good,
he said softly. Dana couldn't help but admire the Lord High Admiral. She liked and trusted him. What was his android double doing right now?
We should try to figure out when the androids captured each of us, Dana said. I recall my last thought.
She told them about coming down to the dome.
Oh, O'Hara said. Yes, that's a good idea. Let me see. I recall eating at Hop Sing's Eastern Delight. They have a wonderful noodle and the best orange chicken. I ordered my meal.
O'Hara frowned, soon shaking her head.
That's it. I was waiting for my plate. Then I found myself in the tube, shivering.
It turned out there was a 2-month difference between their kidnappings.
Sir,
O'Hara said,
do you recall what happened to you?
Cook was staring intently at the Brigadier.
I most certainly do,
the old man said.
You called me to a rendezvous in the forest outside the city. You said it was urgent. I landed in my private air car, and you and Major Stokes approached.
Brigadier, I distinctly remember you spraying a canister of knockout gas in my face.
Not me, sir, O'Hara said, but my android double.
Yes. Yes, of course,
Cook said.
I still feel groggy. Damned android shot me directly over my heart. I think it did that on purpose.
Well, Dana said, we've learned the androids are crafty and seem to have some idea that they're not real.
We know that how? O'Hara asked.
Yours and the Major's android's doubles clearly work together to kidnap the Lord High Admiral. In order to do whatever they're trying to achieve, they would have to know the goal. We have to unmask the androids.
Hopefully without creating a worldwide panic, O'Hara said.
That's secondary, Dana said. We have to stop them from doing anything irreparable. My intuition tells me the androids are probably going to do something to Starship Victory. If I know the captain, he's already unmasked the problem in some fashion. The trouble is, no one on Earth will believe him, particularly if you don't believe him, Brigadier.
You mean my android double not believing him,
O'Hara said.
Of course, Dana said. What else could I mean?
The Brigadier looked away, becoming solemn. Dana had a feeling she'd touched a nerve. What had the Brigadier done to upset the captain? The Iron Lady snapped her fingers impatiently.
I wish this tub could go faster. We have to get to Geneva and the controls of power as soon as we can.
Chapter 52 Captain Maddox sat transfixed in his command chair, watching the building fleet with something approaching despair. He hadn't believed the Lord High Admiral would keep a grudge under these conditions. Maybe as distressing had been the refusal of the Iron Lady to take any of his calls. Victory and Battle Leipzig had interposed themselves between Luna Base and the rest of Port Admiral Hayes's flotilla. They had come out of the hyperspatial tube 3/4 of the way to Earth from Mars. That was incredibly accurate, considering the distance they had traveled from the Dyson Sphere. The flotilla had accelerated and braked shortly, following the directions of Luna Command. Now, the Lord High Admiral had informed Maddox that he was under arrest as a traitor to Star Watch.
You are hereby relieved of command, the Lord High Admiral said on the main screen.
7 Gettysburg-class battleships led the way. Together with a dozen carriers and as many heavy cruisers, they had taken up station near Luna Base. More warships from the home fleet were on their way here. Maddox's mouth was dry, and his eyes had begun to hurt with a gritty feeling.
You have not yet acknowledged my command, the Lord High Admiral said.
I am too stunned to reply, Maddox managed to say.
Who is on the bridge with you?
Maddox stirred, glancing at the others. Valerie stared at him, open-mouthed. Keith had swiveled all the way around. The Kai Kaus chief tech slowly shook his head in dismay. Only Galleon seemed unconcerned. The little ad-hoc hollow image studied the Lord High Admiral with interest.
Lord High Admiral, Maddox said.
I have finished speaking with you, Cook said. You are relieved of command. You will report to the brig on the double.
The words drained out of Maddox as he leaned back against his chair.
This is not right, Galleon said.
Maddox turned to the AI.
I don't want to start a fight with the home fleet.
I haven't heard a reply, Cook said sternly. I expect even a hybrid like you to listen to orders.
Valerie sucked in her breath.
I can't believe this, she whispered.
You left Earth and the solar system against my orders, Cook said. You cannot expect any leniency now, Captain. For once, Maddox did not have any words. He hadn't expected this, certainly not from the Lord High Admiral.
He can't do that to you, Valerie said.
Maddox didn't even glance at her. A feeling of disgust had begun to fill him.
If you remain on the bridge, Cook added, I will order the battleships to open fire.
Maddox's head snapped up. A fire burned in his eyes. Valerie launched out of her seat, stumbling before the main screen.
Respectfully, sir, she told Cook, this is a monstrously bad idea.
Who are you? Cook said.
Valerie blinked with astonishment.
Who am I? You know me, sir.
Cook had a thunderous scowl. Suddenly he nodded.
Yes. Yes, of course, I know you. You are Lieutenant Valerie Noonan.
How can you say it like that?
She asked.
Is something wrong with you, sir?
Cook raised a fist and brought it down on his desk.
That is enough from you, young lady. You will return to your station, or I will relieve you of duty as well.
But
that is an order,
the Lord High Admiral shouted, pounding the desk once more.
crestfallen, with her head hanging, Valerie shuffled back to her station. Maddox had become more alert throughout the exchange. He glanced at Galleon.
The man is an android, of course, Galleon said. I did not detect it immediately, but I can see it now. I have been playing back previous files of him and juxtaposed it against what I have witnessed here. The most reasonable explanation is that he is not himself.
Right, Maddox said quietly. He should have realized it from the beginning, the shock of the command.
I have reacted emotionally,
he whispered to himself, surprised. Galleon heard that and nodded.
It would have been difficult not to have reacted in such a manner. You are human, after all.
Lord High Admiral, Maddox said. I will, of course, comply with your lawful order. It would be wrong of me not to do so. Cook scowled, but nodded curtly. Before I do so, though, Maddox said, I had thought you would want me to report to you on your secret order.
Cook opened his mouth, hesitating before closing it.
You gave me personal orders, sir, and said that I must report to you in person. You spoke of a conspiracy, one that had infiltrated everywhere.
Captain Maddox, Cook said sternly, why are you speaking like this?
I understand, sir, Maddox said. I wasn't supposed to breathe a word of this to anyone. But your order just now,
Captain, Cook said.
You will immediately take a shuttle and come at once to Luna Base. Maddox quit talking as one of the most unusual events occurred since he'd joined Star Watch Intelligence. Guards burst into the Lord High Admiral's office. The big old man turned around in surprise.
What is the meaning of this? He shouted.
Guns went off, propelling the Admiral off his chair onto the floor. An exact replica of Cook strode forward, a haggard image of the man. He held a big, smoking gun, aimed it at the cook on the floor, and emptied the weapon at it. Sparks showered and electrical discharges erupted from the shattered android who had impersonated the Lord High Admiral Cook. The big man with the smoking gun turned toward Maddox. His features were slack and his eyes extremely tired.
It is finished,
the Lord High Admiral said in a tired voice. He smiled wearily, put the gun onto the desk, and slumped into his chair. In a bone-weary manner, he lifted his arms and laid them on the synthy wood top.
Captain Maddox, the Lord High Admiral said, once more, we all owe you our lives. I realize many of you seeing this transmission must be stunned. I have just killed an android. I, along with many others, including Brigadier O'Hara and Dr. Dana Rich, have escaped from an undersea base in the mid-Atlantic Ocean.
Yes, Keith said, slapping his board.
A pulse signal reached the underwater pyramid with the arrival of Starship Victory, the Lord High Admiral said. It started the revival process of many of us who had been kidnapped. I don't know what you did, Captain, but I dearly want to hear about it.
I take it I'm not relieved of duty, Maddox said.
Is that what the thing said?
Maddox nodded. The Lord High Admiral leaned forward, staring into the screen.
Captain Maddox is not relieved of duty. He is a hero to the planet and to Star Watch. I personally congratulate you, sir, for your heroic service in the beyond. I am eager to hear of your exploits and that of your famous crew.
Professor Ludendorff is with us, Maddox said.
The real Ludendorff? Asked Cook.
Yes, sir.
Excellent. Bring him to Geneva with you.
I have others too, sir, Maddox said. They have...
Report at once to Geneva, Captain. I'm tired and need to rest. We'll speak soon.
Yes, sir, Maddox said. That was quite an exploit, sir. You held your gun rock steady.
Never mind about that, Cook said, although he smiled as he said it. I imagine we have a lot to discuss.
Yes, sir, Maddox said. We most certainly do.
Chapter 53. 52 hours after Maddox had met with the Lord High Admiral, giving the old man and the Iron Lady a detailed explanation of his time on the Dyson Sphere, the captain prowled in a bad quarter of Paris. He had come for a very specific purpose. Galleon had discovered the situation. It had happened after Dana boarded the starship and reconnected the extra computing chamber with the AI's backup. Galleon had immediately spoken with Maddox about the possibility. Normally, the captain would have gone to the Iron Lady with the information. His time with the Builder and his new importance as the spokesman of the Kike House had shifted Maddox's outlook. He would take care of this himself. Normally, on this kind of foray, the captain would have brought Sergeant Riker with him. Instead, he wore his wristband with a tight beam connection to the starship in Earth orbit. He also brought along Meta. She was deadlier than the sergeant was, and she wasn't as beholden to Star Watch intelligence as Riker would be. The Kike House were going to change much with their ad hoc technology. Soon, the first Star Watch battleships with ad hoc shields and disruptor cannons would heavily shift the balance of power in the Commonwealth's favor. Depending on what happened out in C Quadrant, the invasion of the throne world seemed more feasible than ever. There was one catch, however. How close was the Swarm Empire to human space? Could humanity still afford the luxury of a deadly war between the new men and the old-style peoples? There was no way to contact Fletcher other than by sending a courier ship to him. That could take weeks, even months. Except, maybe there was a way to contact someone far distant in C Quadrant almost instantly. Galleon had informed the captain that Ludendorff had been on the starship several times since Victory had come into near orbit. The AI had carefully watched the professor. The Methuselah man also happened to be under careful surveillance by O'Hara's best people. None of that seemed to matter to the professor. Tonight, Ludendorff was in Paris. He said he hadn't been in the famous city for over 400 years. Since it was just a short hop from Geneva, the professor had convinced O'Hara to let him take a break from what was going to be a weeks-long debriefing. "He's in the cellar of this building," Galleon said through an earpiece. Maddox glanced across the street. Meta noticed it as she looked up at the stars. The crossing of her right hand over her left arm meant she understood his signal. The captain didn't sense that anyone was tailing him. The starship upstairs in orbit hadn't seen anything either. But one couldn't be too careful. Maddox crossed to a side street, walked downstairs, and entered through a basement door. It was dim in the hallways, a run-down place for the poor. Maddox passed a woman who watched him a little too carefully. It made him extra alert. He turned a corner and noticed something on the floor. He pretended to tie his footwear. He wore boots, but that didn't matter for this. As he knelt, the captain picked up an extremely unique piece of fur. He recognized it as Slarn fur from Wolf Prime. "Galleon," Maddox said softly, using sub-vocalization from the microphone on his throat. "Do you remember the Slarn Hunter Villars?"
"Cesar Villars," Galleon said. "Yes, I do."
Maddox stood thoughtfully, sliding the piece of fur into a pocket. The captain had reason to remember the creature and the man. Slarn were vicious hunting beasts from Wolf Prime, famous for their violent temper, dangerous teeth, claws, speed, and cunning. Slarn fur was prized throughout the Commonwealth. Rugged men trapped Slarns on Wolf Prime. If they survived several years of it, the trappers could become quite wealthy. Maddox had originally found Ludendorff on the Winter World, studying swarm ruins. The professor had kept bodyguards, one of them being Cesar Villars, a young Methuselah man of murderous intent. The white-haired Slarn hunter had been blocky, with a thick neck and an ugly scar running across his right eye and down his cheek.
It had come from a Slarn's claw. The eye socket had contained a smooth ball bearing, which had really been a tech tool, giving the man radar vision. Villars had been tough, had learned to hate Maddox, and desired to kill Meta. The captain had finally incapacitated the dangerous hunter, handing him over to Starwatch intelligence on Earth during the time of the destroyer incident. Maddox wondered about Cesar Villars, android doubles, and the Methuselah men. Maybe one of the android doubles had quietly released Villars from confinement when it had had the chance. Ludendorff would undoubtedly want his bodyguard because the professor implicitly trusted the man. Ludendorff had modified Villars' thinking, making him completely loyal to him. For all Ludendorff's help in the Dyson sphere and star system, the professor still had his secret agenda. The piece of Slarn fur meant something. "Scan the area to see if Villars is in the building," Maddox told Galleon.
"Scanning," Galleon said. "Scanning. Oh, this is interesting. Villars is here. How did you know, Captain?"
"An educated guess," Maddox said. "Is Villars with the professor?"
"That is an affirmative."
Maddox allowed his lips to stretch into a grimace. Villars should have been kept under lock and key for the rest of his life, or sent to Loki Prime.